Session number 12248, Mr. J. Forster, Reel 10.
Mr. J. Forster, Reel 10. We're talking about company headquarters, Mr. Forster. Who, or what was the personnel situation inside company headquarters?
Well, in the company headquarters, you had your company commander, and the second in command, and then the CSM, company sergeant major. That was in the company headquarters.
And your duties would take you to headquarters?
Yes, I was at headquarters at the time. I used to be at headquarters with being the company commander's driver then. You see, you had to be handy at all times, and I was always there.
Did the company commander each, or at certain times of the day, actually go around his positions, his company positions?
Oh, yes.
And did you accompany him?
Oh, yes, 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 yes.
And what particularly was he looking for or checking on?
Well, when he went round positions, they always used to check up line of fire and that's right. And also if... used to get any word of the enemy's movements, you know, where they move more to the left, more to the right, or such like. They'd alter positions to cover that, move the arc of fire. You know. And used to go out to say that the lads were all right out there, and they had plenty of ammunition and everything they wanted. A signaller, because there was always a signaller went out, unless it was a short distance. If it was a short distance, they'd run a telephone wire out. Run a telephone wire out and be in contact with telephone wires. And a telephone wire always went out to a listening post. Because wireless could be picked up, the jerrys at that short distance, they could pick it up. So telephone wire always went out to the listening post. Direct contact.
In relation to company headquarters, what would be the likely positions of the platoons?
Well, the platoons did in the box, you see, in that box affair, you facing the front almost the time. The field of action was at the front. Well, the companies would be spread along that length of box in front of them, you see, in front of the battalion, what the battalion had, what they were allocated to look after, the companies would be along there. And then you'd get another battalion taken over, I'm just saying. Same that we had, you see, we ran right up to the South African box. And then there was a gap, a minefield gap. And then it started our box. And it went on that way, right to the end of the box. All the way down the front line. But you weren't what you call like an old times all stretched out in trenches. You were in these boxes with big minefields in front of you, and that, you know, minefield right round. Mm.
So immediately in front of the positions there was what, wire?
There was wire, yes, there was wire and minefields.
What kind of description have you for the wire?
All it was all, what do you call it, there was, well, it wasn't a lot of what we call dunnered wire, that was the coiled wire. There wasn't a lot of that. It was barbed wire crisscrossed, you know, from post these iron stakes in, and barbed wire crisscrossed. Now, in front of that barbed wire was the minefield. Minefield. Yeah.
Was that marked and indicated?
Oh,
so
yeah.
You knew where they were?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yes, they knew exactly where the gaps were, you know, as well, to get out and get back in.
How wide was the wire? What kind of width of ground would the wire cover?
Oh, it would... Oh...
It wasn't, for example, a single strand.
No, it was. Oh, let me think if I can just picture. It'd be 100 yards. 100 yards in depth with the wire. Yeah.
And the height?
And the height. Well, the height would be about 6 foot. 6 foot, yeah. About 6 foot, the height. Weren't right high, about 6 foot high.
But how wide then would the minefield come in front of the wire?
The minefield, well, the minefield, it really depended on the minefield. You might have the minefield for about, say, 200 yards wide the minefield. And they weren't in a dead straight line, you know, when the minefield went out. Oh, yeah.
Were these anti-personnel mines or tank mines?
Tank mines and anti-personnel mines, you know, yeah. But mostly tank mines, yeah.
How far were the Germans away from you at this time? Or the enemy, because there's Italians as well.
Yeah. I think the nearest would be about 40 miles, I think, 40 miles, mm-hmm. 40 miles. But that was the main one, but they had one nearer than us because they had their listening posts and patrol, same as us, you see. They were probing as well as we were probing. Yeah. But they hadn't jock column, same as us. No.
You mentioned listening posts. Were they given code names so that you could recognise them?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Do you recall any of them?
Yes. There was... what was it? Heartthrob. Heartthrob was one. I remember Heartthrob. Redbreast was another. Heartthrob, Redbreast. And they changed every day, you know. They changed every day. Yeah. Heartthrob, Redbreast. What was your idea? Westminster.
And how many men would be holding one of these posts, for example?
Oh, there'd be about four. Four in each post, four.
Mm-hmm. Were there any larger posts
than
those?
No, you see, you had to keep these posts as small as possible, so he couldn't see them, you know, so the enemy couldn't see you when he was flying over his planes and that. The bigger the post you got, it was easier seen, so you had to keep it, and so they could be able to camouflage. They were like a sniper, you know, and had to be able to camouflage themselves.
Within the box, before the enemy came closer later on, were you able to move around relatively freely during the day?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, was there
much
ground.
Was there much air activity?
There were at times, yes, we had them come over, us at times, they did bomb us once, but this luck happened to have target, and the machine gunned us once, but... I don't think there was any, no, there was no casualties, because they were all inside the escarpment, you know. no casualties. And then one day, a big Italian bomber came over, and we had an AKAK gun team in the box, and there were Kiwis. And it was a foggy morning, and this big Savoy machete free engine thing, you know, came over, ready to drop his bombs. And he came right over these AKAK gunners, and their guns was pointing. The gunners were lying flat on their back, and the gun was pointing straight up. And they shot them down. You could see the shells going straight up into the... and they shot them down, aye. But to be straight up like that, it was marvellous. Yeah, straight up. The gunners were lying back on their back.
What other supporting arms did you have in the box with you?
Oh, well, we had artillery, anti-tank guns, which were our own anti-tank guns. They were only 2-pounder things, you know, and they were our own. There wasn't any anti-tank company like what they had, you know, in Europe and that later on, anti-tank special ones. You had your own anti-tank platoon, and the artillery, well, you always had artillery going around with you. And
what size weapon was
25 pounders.
With a good gun?
Oh, they were good gun. Good gun was a 25 pounder. Yeah, oh, he was a good gun. He could reach about 10, 11 mile away. And accurate. Good gun. And it was also a good gun for tanks. Where our 2-pounders, you know, they used to stuck off the tanks. If he got down and he got with his gun in a position, anti-tank, open sight, what do you call it, open sight firing, oh, he could blast the tanks out. Yeah, he was a good gun.
What other units did you have?
Well, that's more or less what only thing we had, because when we were static, you see, we were in that box, and we weren't on the move or anything. If we had to go on the move, they used to call the RASC in, Service Corps, but they had come from Tobruk or somewhere, you see. There was no need, really, for them to be there. No need for them to be there. The only what wanted to be there was anything in the defence line, you know, because we were more or less defending. We weren't attacking, we were defending. And you had your guns. And then further back, you got your bigger guns, and then you come into your, just a short way behind us was the first tank brigade. A tank regiment was just behind us, the first tank.
They weren't in your box, though?
No.
You'd have engineers, no doubt.
Oh, you had your own engineers, and then the engineer, the RDs, they were stationed behind as well, you see, and they were just called upon when anybody wanted them, you know. Say, laying minefields, they laid the minefields, RAs, and then took them up, and such like. But you closed your own mine gaps, minefield gaps, and opened them up in the morning. Because you could only get a truck through, just one truck through, that's all. Just one truck through at a time. Yeah. They hadn't to be very wide, you see, and...
What were your duties in the box?
Well, my duties in the box, I was beck and call all the time. Company commander beck and call all the time, you know. And if you take them out, say to these listening posts, or take them out, you might want to go over and have a powwow with the South Africans, I might want to go and have a powwow with the other regiment at the other side of his, you know, case. And they're always going back and forward, getting to know one another's, what they were doing, you know, and anything they had new, always going back and forward. And they always went after stand two in the morning. He always went right down the all the platoons and that, right down to say that everything was okay.
This was still Cummins, Major Cummins?
Aye, it was Major Cummins. And then other times you'd have to take him to Tobruk or somewhere like that, you know. Different place, and then to these conferences, different places, brigade and such things. Or they might have a big, you know, say a big conference going on at in the South African lines. You'd have to go over there, or maybe down the Free French further down that, or maybe back in the tanks. You know, there's these conferences going on all the time.
Hmm. And did you have other jobs to do, as with the rest of the company?
No, I just looked after, kept me pick up in order. I didn't order, looked at the pickup. That's all right.
Was there plenty of petrol and lubricants for you, for your
wife? Well, plenty of petrol come up. But we had that stored in a big dugout as well, you know. But petrol, there was more petrol lost in the desert than was used, I think. Because they used to come up in thin petrol tins, were made in Egypt, very thin petrol tins, 5 gallons. And you just need to touch them, you could touch them with your fingernail and you'd pierce them. Well, many times you get a load of petrol up and half of it was empty. And there was millions of gallons of petrol lost in the desert through those tins. And it didn't start to save petrol until it copied the German jerry can. You know, that was an entirely different thing, the German jerry can. But all these petrol tins, thousands of gallons lost.
You mentioned that patrolling was quite active. Were you involved in patrolling?
Oh, yeah.
How was a patrol formed?
Well, the patrol was formed, you see, it was formed on a battalion basis, was a patrol, when it was a battalion patrol, and C Company might provide it one day. Well, it'd be the men out of C Company, see, and they'd go out and they'd have a carrier or two carriers with them, see, and maybe it's an anti-tank gun. Well, they'd do, and they'd just go to a limit, so far, to a limit. And the patrol maybe be out half a day, you know, and then they'd come somewhere, and it wasn't only a patrol working round, they'd go out and they'd maybe sit for 4 or 5 hours behind some knoll or some escarpment trying to get the picture of what was going on in front, and then they'd come home again. Well, there might be another patrol for about 2 days, and then another company, D Company, might do it this time. But they always had a couple of brain gun carriers,